This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs and topic program. Co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Leanne and Cheryl. Lovely, Leanne's just come up from
evening.
The floor.
I was having a little lie down, it's been a hard day, but I'm here for Hear Me Roar.
Fantastic. How are you, Cheryl? This is your first Hear Me Roar?
It is.
We feel good?
Yes.
A bit nervous?
Be gentle.
No way, not with Leanne. Not going to happen. We're not gentle at all. Tonight we've got Trish Eyre. She's a bereavement counsellor and a mental health social worker, and she's going to be talking to us about grief and the rituals that help us cope with grief. It is a hard subject, but we're going to take it heads on, Hear Me Roar style, and she's also going to give us some guidance in supporting others who are grieving. Cheryl, what's happening?
There is lots of things going on in the world at the moment, but one that in particular has caught my attention is a requirement for a public meeting for, in reaction, I suppose, to a spate of alleged homophobic incidences in Brunswick.
What's going on?
Sam Stoker, one of the organisers, I can't speak, I do apologise, of Orlando, a queer night held in the Victoria Hotel in Brunswick, has called the meeting in response to what she says is a backlash to the increase in queer nights in Brunswick.
So what's going on? There's more facilities in Brunswick now having queer nights?
Yeah, there are. They're a lot more prevalent than what they were. And just in the last week or so, they've had 50 posters defaced with homophobic
stuff written on them.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
nice.
Crappy.
And something happened at a club a couple of weeks ago. I remember reading about it when there was a band on and there was a bit of argy-bargy. Someone made a homophobic comment and the guy got up on stage and
someone threw
a beer glass and the police are reviewing the tape.
Yeah, because the band has said that no, they didn't. And he's got a lot of gay friends and whatever. And he's happy reviewing that. He actually wants the tape reviewed because he doesn't believe in any way that he was being homophobic. So it's really interesting because that's close to my hometown. Being a lesbian, you know, Thornbury North, you know, that kind of girl. And it's really interesting to think that that's happening in my suburbs.
Well, I always feel pretty safe around those areas and it's, a shock. So this public meeting's happening tomorrow night.
So Friday, September 4th at the Victoria Hotel.
In Brunswick.
In Brunswick.
Well, not a good move.
be careful when you go outside. 6 p.m. But absolutely, you know, get out there. If you've had an issue that you've seen, been a part of, you know, we had the glows in the other week, didn't we, Leanne?
Yeah, that's right. We had Gabby in, who's one of the police gay and lesbian police liaison officers, talking about violence and homophobia. So it'd be worth going along if you're interested in that sort of thing and just find out what's going on.
Yeah, and try and stop it. And Gabby was saying, if you don't tell us, we can't do anything about it. So obviously they're going to try and act on some stuff. But, yeah, it's pretty sad to think that that's happening in Brunswick.
Now, we've got some news from down south, from Tasmania.
Oh, dear.
Tasmanian activists.
Thanks,
Leanne. Not my down south. That wasn't what I was doing on the floor. Just checking.
Shame about that.
Checking that map of Tassie. Tasmanian activist Martine Delaney has said she will seriously consider a fresh anti-discrimination complaint against the Liberal Party if it attacks the human rights of transgender and intersex people in the lead-up to the next state election. Because they did do this already, both, I think it was the Brethren and the Liberal Party, in 2006 said that policies in relation to transgender and intersex people would ruin our families and society.
Bollocks.
Sorry. That's our professional opinion.
That's as profound as I get on this. I think this is absolutely outrageous. What were my words before? That's disgraceful.
She yelled out before, that's disgraceful. We weren't even on air. Delaney's complaint was against the Liberal Party over the party's involvement in the publication of the Exclusive Brethren ads targeting transgender and intersex issues in the lead up to the election. Now, that basically, they both resolved the complaint. Is that right? They said, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, whoops, it's all sorted out. And then the darling Liberals.
Yes.
But what did they come back with?
But then, we could not rule out future ads targeting Greens policies on transgender and intersex people.
Hello?
I mean,
I don't get it. Saying? So they resolved the issue and said, look, sorry about that, but yeah, look, it might happen again.
But yeah. I mean, you could say we can't promise not to make some comment on policies.
Yeah.
Right, which is a fair thing to do. Exactly, but not start do exactly the same thing.
No. It doesn't make sense that you can say, yes, in the future we may slag transgender intersex people because, hey, you know, it's part of our makeup.
That's right.
There must be such a high Christian backing. No offence to the Christians who do, you know, are in our community, but, you know, the Christians who are against, the lobbyists who are against the gay and lesbian community.
Well, Bob Brown has called for an inquiry into the extent of the Exclusive Brethren's influence in federal politics. I think before the last federal election, didn't it come to light that the Exclusive Brethren had had several meetings with John Howard?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Bit of infiltration in the ranks.
There is, and I guess they there's a lot of money changing hands in the sense of, you know, they're buying, you know, policy and getting politicians in who, you know, value specific systems, and obviously intersex and transgender don't equate to much, darling.
It's not very inclusive.
It's not very inclusive as opposed to the Mardi Gras. What's happening in Mardi Gras land?
Well, fundraising, lots of it. Getting money given to them from all sorts of folk, which is always handy. I guess in one way they realise that they've got to spend money on it because they generate enough income from it. So the City of Sydney has put $450,000 towards the Mardi Gras. So that's a really positive step, as I said, considering it generates so much income for the city.
And considering that it seems like over the years they've made a bit of a loss, so that'll give them a good kick start.
Yeah.
It is a kick start. What's your opinion on the Mardi Gras, Lynn? Do you think it's a bit of a show pony thing? Do you think it's a straight...
We've lost the political whack that it had, and it's lost the community field, and it's just one more big straight party to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there are surrounding events, but in terms of the parade and everything.
I've never been. So I don't know whether I can comment, but to me it kind of seems like a straight kind of fascination, titillation. You know, these are the... I mean, it's a fantastic event, don't get me wrong. Yeah, but
it's a great spectacular.
It's kind of lost its edge, hasn't it, for what it was.
The poignancy, I suppose.
Yeah, because the arrangement is that the city-sponsored Mardi Gras will be $150,000 per annum over the 2010-2012 Mardi Gras seasons. Do you think we should do a Mardi Gras here in Melbourne?
No.
No.
No. That's the long answer.
No, I don't reckon. I reckon Pride March is good. Midsummer Carnival. Yeah. I prefer Carnival Day to something like that.
I think I like Pride. I think Pride is...
Pride March is a good one, isn't it?
Because it is about Pride.
Talking about Pride and Proud, we've got a text in. Hello, ladies. I do love a good old Hear Me Roar. And what an interesting topic, because we are talking about grief tonight, to discuss. Love your favourite Barbie, Steve. Hello, Steve. Glitter and Tonic. If you haven't heard Glitter and Tonic on a Wednesday night, you should. That's what I say.
He's gorgeous shoes.
He's got the best Connex shoes. That's the wrong word, isn't it?
Have they got tracks on them?
I'll try Converse. He's got glittery ones, of course, because he's Glitter and Tonic. Now tell me, what is going on in Beijing? Are they getting things right?
No.
No. Again, the long answer. Because
that'd be so unlike China.
Yeah.
Getting things right.
Now, come on, what's going on there?
Okay. Australian women have a once-in-5-year chance to hold their government to account for the progress, or lack thereof, made towards the objectives set down in the Beijing Platform for Action. So, basically, it's a forum where women can come together and say, this is my experience, this is how we should be acknowledged, this is how we should be looked at. Because previously what has happened is the lesbian caucus was overlooked by the Christian and Muslim fundamentalists, who have united to have any mention of lesbianism expunged from the final platform. So really it's about getting out saying, giving people your story and saying, you know, we're here. We're here to be counted. We've got something to say. Acknowledge us. Join in with one of the information caravans and get yourself out there.
What's it looking for? Is it looking for stories of lesbians? I'm a bit confused. Is it looking for information just to say that we're out there, or is it saying that we don't consider lesbians? I'm a bit confused.
It says Australian lesbians can put their stories and experiences into the official record.
I don't think, is it me, or I don't get, why should we be any different? I mean, we're women first, aren't we?
Yes.
So, you know, it's kind of like we have to be women and then lesbians, and then we have to protest and then we have to do this. It's exhausting being a lesbian at times, I can tell you. Don't you think?
It sounds to me it's a bit like a sort of knee-jerk reaction to something hasn't been done. So, let's just get them to tell their stories and that'll keep them quiet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
There's something
Why
going on.
Why is the question?
After the break, we're going to catch up with Trish. As we said, we're going to talk about grief. Not so much all the sad stuff, but it is obviously sad, but the do's and don'ts in helping people that we know cope with grief. You're listening to Hear Me Roar with Sue, Leanne and Cheryl. Good evening. Leanne's pointing to me. It's quite funny. You're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs and topic program. We've got a text in from the lovely Donzie. Girls, 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 I am loving it. Sue, you sound hot. Of course I'm hot. I only sound hot. I look hot,
you
don't I?
You do, especially that new hairdo. Loving it.
I have a new do. You know, as a teacher, I just don't have time to get stuff. And that's it. I'm going to get a haircut. Now I feel completely different. I wish I'd done it 6 months ago. But, of course, then I wouldn't have had long hair. Would have a stupid comment. Anyway, tonight, let's get back on track. Tonight in the studio, we have the lovely Trish. Trish is a bereavement counsellor and mental health social worker. You're going to be talking to us tonight about grief and the rituals that help us cope with grief. Now, tell us your title role, or have I pretty much covered it?
I think, hi Sue and Cheryl, I think you've pretty much covered it. I work as a bereavement counsellor and a mental health social worker, which involves counselling many different things, but primarily I work with grief.
Okay, and so you're in the Camberwell Hawthorne area, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Okay, so who do you actually see?
Look, I see some people who've lost a loved one, and also people who are anticipating death. So somebody, their person might have a terminal illness, so I could work with that person. I could work with a person who is actually dying themselves. And I do see quite a number of people who've lost a companion animal too.
Oh, okay. Is that wrong word, but is it becoming more popular to see a counsellor when you've lost a pet?
I think it's more recognised as a form of grief now. For some people, losing a companion animal is like losing the very closest person in their life, and it can be devastating.
No, I was just thinking in terms of grief, my father passed away as well not long ago. So it is such an in-depth thing. You can't categorise it. You can't say, act like this, feel like this, do this at this time. It's such a broad and personal experience, journey, if you will.
Look, it is. And look, I always say to my people that there's no blueprint for how we do grief. There isn't any right or wrong. It's a very unique experience. It's the human's response to loss of a loved one. And, you know, you can't sort of, there's no rules around this.
And but I guess we're dealing with a society that has a sort of rules that you're not supposed to grieve for too long, you're not supposed to cry in public, you're not supposed to do this and that. Do you find people struggle with that as well as the grief?
What people tend to struggle with is that their friends tend to say, you'll get over it. And after 6 months, you know, don't worry, you'll get over it. And after 12 months, look, you should be over it by now. Mm. But really there's no such thing as getting over it, because we don't get over grief. We learn to manage our life. We learn to have a good life around the grief, but we don't get over it. How can you?
So what does grief actually mean? What is it? Does it have grief is the process of?
I guess it's a process of mourning the loss of a loved one. It can be a very intense and difficult experience. And, you know, everyone has a different experience, and it depends. Grief is relational, really. It depends on the relationship with the person who's gone. It depends on the cause of death. It depends on the support that people have around them. And it also depends on people's past experience of dealing with emotional distress.
And I'd also gather, Trish, that some people might think they know how they'll react, but actually when it happens, they surprise themselves about their reactions.
I think that's exactly right. I think we never really know how we're going to be until we lose a certain person. We just don't know.
Mm, that's right. So maybe your behaviour can be quite different. It can manifest itself in all sorts of ways.
And look,
you know, being angry or...
People react in so many different ways. I mean, people can behave. They can yell and scream and cry and wail. And other people can maybe not cry at all. They may not be able to feel anything for quite a while after the death. And especially if something is sudden and traumatic, they may not be able to deal with their emotions for quite a period of time after that.
Is that a sort of a human emotional thing, to like a self-protection thing, to actually shut down a bit, just to, I don't know, give yourself some space to recover or protect or whatever?
Yeah, I think it is. And I also think it depends on a person's experience of emotional distress in the past.
Mm.
Some people have, when they deal with emotional stress, they go into a numbness state and they actually can't feel anything. And it is just a protective mechanism. Yeah, it's a survival mechanism, especially in the case of a traumatic death. It's to help the person get through what they have to get through, you know, maybe identifying the body, organising the funeral, all of that sort of thing initially.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a theory around that, which is my theory, and you'll probably say no. But my partner died 7 years ago from breast cancer, and, I mean, it's a pretty traumatic thing to happen. And actually then my dad died a couple of years later, and that was very sudden. But in both things, whenever there's a death around, as you just said, you have to organise a funeral, mm-hmm. and there's all sorts of stuff you have to deal with. And I'm almost wondering if that's a way that you actually move on in those first couple of days, because you've just got to do this stuff. Like the first couple of days after someone dies, you're so busy.
It is.
It's not like you haven't got time to grieve, because you are all the time, but you actually have got this stuff you've just got to
I think do. So. Yeah, there is, and that's really important to have the ritual around having a funeral. It really serves an enormous purpose in helping people start to go through their process of grief. And it's really... acknowledging that the person has died, it's starting to move from the knowledge in one's head to the feeling, the pain of the loss of the person. And it can start to be a celebration of that person's life as well, because often, and I can remember when my mum died, we had the funeral and we had various people talking about her, and I learnt things about her I never knew. Often people can find out about their person things that they never even heard of before.
That's actually one of my fears, that
they'll find out about you.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's now I've got two fears, is that I won't know enough about the people in my life until they're gone, because that is the platform to talk about. You know, they were born in 1971 and you learn so much. I didn't know that they loved sewing or whatever. It's quite scary to know that I don't know that information now, when it's actually probably a little bit more important. Do you find people go through that?
I think people do. People can think, look, I wish I'd done this. They have regrets. I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd spent more time. I wish I'd kind of, you know, spent more time, especially if it's a person who's going through the dying process from, you know, time before they were sick. But in a way, that's where working in this field really teaches me to try and really live life every day, like every day enjoy it and every day be with the people who are close to me. It really does do that.
It does make a difference. You link in, obviously, with funeral homes. And I didn't know till recently that you can have a funeral at home. Leanne, did you know that you could do a funeral at home?
No, I didn't.
No. Cheryl?
No.
No. And,
no.
And I think it was you that actually told me. We were interviewing Peter on...
I think it was Peter who mentioned
on
that.
On Allegro. Yeah. Yeah, and I had no idea that you could have that celebration at home. Is it common knowledge now? Is it starting to be common knowledge? Or is it just a new... trend?
I don't know that it is so much common knowledge, really. I think a lot more people will take their person home and have them overnight, and then take them to the place where the funeral is, like the church or wherever. That's quite often done, but I don't think people really generally are aware that they can actually have the service at home if they want to.
And there's variations, isn't there, in the service?
Variations. Oh, look, services can be, there's anything and everything from how people manage their service. I heard of one the other day where the person was dying and he recorded his own eulogy. So he was talking about himself during the funeral, and most people knew, but some people didn't know. And I think the whole church was in,
got a bit of a shock.
Was in tears.
Yeah. Well, they were in tears. You know it was going to happen, you'd get a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The lid of the coffin would be coming up just a little bit. That'd be funny. You could do it like a little...
You'd do that.
I would do that.
You would do
I'd
that.
I'd go, I'm watching...
You'd have like an animatronics thing happening and scare the shit out of us all.
No, I was just thinking, because both my partner and my dad died at home, and I think having them in the house was a really precious thing to have that sort of almost you knew when they were gone.
I agree with you. When my father died, he died suddenly. We were all called home. And when I went there, he was still there. Like, his spirit was still there. I could feel that he was there, that he hadn't gone. And when we saw him later in the funeral parlour, he was gone. He wasn't there. And it's a really acute thing that you can be aware of with your person when they die, that they can be around for a while. They don't necessarily go to wherever they're going to go.
Yeah. Mind you, the night Dad died, he was in the house and Mum was there, and I was the only child staying. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and thought, I hope Mum doesn't like get so much of a shock about it happening that she dies and I'll be left with two dead people in my house. So I spent the whole night and I was like stressing.
Being stressed.
Yeah. I love Leanne. She's just great.
And, you know, the other thing I was going to say too at funerals is often people can start to laugh about things too, because often at funerals people can talk about the person who's died and put a few funny things in about their life, so people can start to remember, you know, things that are funny, and they can enjoy it as well as it being a really difficult process. There can be some good things about a funeral as well.
So what are the kind of activities that, like you said, a good thing at a funeral? I know because I have a situation of the death of my own child, one of my children, and I've got to know other people whose children are dying, and you share your experiences. And, you know, people put balloons up and things. What are some of the nice things that people can do that kind of take it away from that whole gloom and doom?
Look, I think there's anything that the human imagination can bring forth. I think people will often bring parts of a person's life there. Like if a person is, say, you know, not a very little person, an older person, then you can bring parts representing different parts of their life and have it there as, you know, as a memento to the person. If it's a very little person, people might bring their teddy bears, their clothes, you know, any little things, even little children who die in utero have handprints. They can bring all of these things to the funeral because it's a representation that this baby is a person, and this person, we've lost this person. And for a little person, it's all for the family, it's all the expectations of what the life was going to be. It's a loss of all of that. It's not just the loss of the person at the time, the baby. It's a loss of what life would have been like, and how, as people losing a child, you thought your life would be, and it's not.
It is. It's horrendous.
Horrendous. I'm just trying to think what we did for Jen. Put the dog lead in the coffin because the dog died just before her. It was a top year, actually. But we put the dog lead in because we thought, well, Jessie's in heaven.
That's great.
We can do that. And for a friend of mine put in for her mum, put in a hanky because she said her mum was always had to have a hanky. She put a handbag with a hanky and she put a pack of smokes in because this woman
smoked.
That's
fantastic.
And then after the funeral, she said to us all, I forgot to put a cigarette lighter in. Oh. And she's like really beating herself up about it. Yeah. And we all rallied and said, well, it's a great opportunity for her to go and meet other people and ask them for a light.
I love that. That's fantastic. Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar. And that was the most beautiful rendition of Hallelujah from Katie Lang. It's gorgeous, isn't it?
Oh, it's wonderful. I love that song.
Have you heard that a lot at funerals, Trish?
Yeah, that is played a lot at funerals. I'd love it to be played at my own because I just absolutely adore it. And music is a thing we didn't mention before, that at funerals music can really give us a sense of the person. It's a wonderful thing to have.
Had the Carlton theme song at Dad's.
So did my dad.
There you go. As the coffin was going out. And we all lost it because we're so used to him playing it every time the blues went. We hadn't heard it for a few years.
And we had the same dad.
Oh, no.
I've got a sister called Leanne too, so maybe it's the same dad.
That's another show.
That's next week.
We're not Tasmanians.
Oh, I can't get back on track. Now, we are talking grief tonight, and, you know, we are laughing because grief is a horrible thing to go through, and it's good to laugh, it's good to smile, it's good to celebrate life, it's good to look at the things that actually make us happy in those times where you just feel you can't breathe and your chest is going to cave in and your heart's going to fall out onto the floor. We're talking the do's and don'ts. Let's talk some do's and don'ts because there's some great things people can do to help support friends in grief or family in grief, and there's some pretty good no-nos. Trish, could you help us with some good do's?
I think one of the main things that start when someone dies is for people to say, look, I'm sorry, to send a card, to try and acknowledge the person who's died, and to be available to your friends or whoever to be able to talk about the person, not to be scared to mention their name. And the thing is that people, when they're grieving, people will cry, people will want to talk about it, people may want to say the same thing over and over and over again. So it's being able to listen, sit with someone as they go through this process, and not judge, not, you know, think they should be at any particular stage, but just sit there with them. And sometimes it's hard to know what to say. And even saying to someone, look, I don't know what to say, but, you know, is there anything I can do to help you? Even things like practical things in the initial stages after someone's died can be really, really helpful. And it can be good to ask a person, what can I do? Would you like me to get some shopping for you? Would you like me to pay some bills? Would you like me to do anything around? I'm happy to do, bring some food over, just to help the family or that person get through that really initial, really raw stage. And then as time goes on, often after the funeral, things kind of, people, friends and supporters tend to get back to their life. And so it's really important to try and keep up the support, keep ringing someone, how are you going? And in, sometimes people will say, look, give me a ring if you need anything, but somebody in deep grief is not going to ring. So it's up to all the supporters to actually ring them, see if they can drop over, send cards, remember the person, talk about the person, bring their name up in the conversation. And also the thing is, if you're really closely supporting someone who's lost someone, it is a very exhausting and a demanding process. So look after yourself. You know, when we're supporting, we have to look after ourselves. Very important.
It is. Cheryl?
You were saying before about the stages and the time that it takes to go through. Just the other day, in my work, I had a lady who had, actually, I don't even know how long ago she lost her husband, fairly recently, but she was at the point where she was, she's awaiting his remains to come home from the funeral home. And she was feeling very distressed because she promised him that she would scatter his ashes at a beach and they'd, you know, sort their local regulations and whatnot. But she was so distressed with this notion of fulfilling this wish because she's not ready to let go of him. And all her friends and family are in that position of saying, it's time, we've got to dispose. I know that sounds terrible, but, you know, we've got to deal with this. And I think I was quite contrary because she was really lovely. And I said to her, I said, bugger what anybody else says. If you need to take him home and if you need to pop him in the cupboard until you're ready to deal with him, well, then you do that.
Trish?
I think that's exactly right. I think she's the one who's the closest person to the man who's died. She's the one who needs to make the decision. Other people around kind of want to get on with it and want her to get on with it. So they think that this maybe might help her, that she should do it. She's at that stage. But really, she needs to do that when and if she's ready. And some people can have the ashes for a number of years, I can tell you, before they're ready to do that. And they can actually split them up and put some here and keep some. Some people can keep them for years and years and years.
Well, that's what I said to her. I said, for one, they've been together for over 50 years. It's going to take longer than 5 months to be ready to part with that person. Mm-hmm. And then if you do, you know, if you scatter him prematurely, well, what are you doing? What damage and what harm are you doing to yourself in, you know, it's just too distressing. There's no way that I would be pushing anybody into, you know, it's time. Bollocks, it's time. I'll do it in my own good time. Thank you very much.
I think that's the thing. It would only cause her a lot more grief if people around her pressured her into something she doesn't want to do. You know, she needs to, she might not even want to scatter them for such a long time, and she might only want to scatter some of them where he wanted.
Yeah.
And then, in a way, she would have fulfilled what he wants, but be able to keep something for her. I mean, 5 months is just like yesterday.
Yeah.
It's absolutely like yesterday.
It's not long at all.
No.
Not long at all.
And I was just going to say that there's no rule book, and I guess people are trying to help her move on, but she's like you said before, you don't move on, you move with. And so she needs to, I guess, to run to her own beat.
Yeah.
And people need to support that. What, Leanne?
I was going to just think, we're talking about things that people say inappropriately, and I think a lot of it's because they don't know what to say or they're trying to relate to their experience. But, you know, I had people say, oh, I remembered when my girlfriend left, how upset I was. And I thought, well, splitting up with someone's a bit different to someone dying because you can still, like, hate them.
They're still around to kick.
There's no choice
in death.
You know, and it's like people trying to put their own spin on. And I know they're trying to say, I don't know, show some empathy. But there are some things that are really insulting.
Look, there are some things that are really, you know, hurtful. Not in the best interest and very hurtful for people. And people can say something like, oh, look, don't worry, you can have another baby after someone's just lost their baby. Yeah. And or else, you know, you'll get over it, which you won't, or it's for the best, or, you know, it's God's will. That's another thing that gets said a lot.
Which is good when you're not religious, let me tell you.
Yeah. Gotta love that.
It is. And the other thing I can say, that sometimes for supporters, if you do make a mistake in saying something, you think, oh, why did I say that? You can always say, look, I'm really sorry. You know, I'm struggling with what to say. I'm really sorry. I don't mean that. You know, you can always kind of come back after you've made a comment that, once you hear it, you think, oh, my God, why did I say that?
Yeah, that's true.
It is true because a lot of people do say, I know how you feel, when really perhaps they have an empathy and an understanding, but really they're not going through that.
Look, they're not, because really we don't know how another person feels. We just never really know. We only know how we feel from our own experience of a loss in life. Somebody else's experience is going to be different and they are going to react in their own way. So that's probably not that helpful to say, I know how you feel. But it's more helpful to say, look, how are you feeling? To ask them and give them an opportunity to be able to talk about what's going on for them.
Okay, so Trish, the time just flies so quickly here. We need to look at how we celebrate a life. What kind of things can we do to celebrate a person's life, even prior or during the dying and then post?
Look, during the dying process, if someone is dying and people, you know, family and friends can be with them, people do many things. They can have music playing, they can have candles, they can, if a person's dying, they can read to the person, tell them stories if they like. There's many things we can do, anything that is, we feel is gentle and nice when the person is actually going through that process of dying. And in a way, it's a person's hearing is the last sense that will leave a person when they die, so they can often hear. So talking to the person, telling the person we love them, talking and remembering things from the past can be a really helpful way to help a person in the dying process, to support them as they die, and for us too, to remember our life with the person.
It's so important to find the right way to help you grieve and family and support and acknowledge. I mean, with my son's birthday, he would have been 11 today. Happy birthday, Henry. And we made a cake last night and the kids decorated. Beautiful. I should have said it was an absolute mess. But, you know, we had such a good time, and I think it's really important to annually celebrate the life. Some people have a lot of support and great friends and great family, and I did. And, Leanne, I'm assuming you did.
Absolutely.
Great.
Some people don't. Now, where can we go for support? Where can we look?
Okay, well, there's a wonderful place called the Australian Centre for Grief and Bereavement. It's actually at McCulloch House and next to Monash Hospital, and there they have lots of facilities. They have a counselling service. They have lots of groups for people who've lost someone. They have a group for younger bereaved partners. They have older people who've lost their partner. They have groups called KG2, which is Kids Grieve Too, because children grieve as well. When there's a loss in a family, the children grieve, and that's a whole nother issue.
And they're obviously the forgotten ones, I would think.
Well, they can be, and often family members want to protect children and sort of don't want the children to suffer, so they don't kind of include them, but children suffer and they know what's going on. So they have a wonderful group there. They have a companion animal support group. They have a group called Motherless Mothers, which is a really interesting thing. And there's quite a number of regional groups around different areas that people can go to get that sort of support. There's also the Australian Centre for Grief and Bereavement have lots of pamphlets that you can access. You just have to ring them up and they will send them out to you. And there's one I've got here in my hand now. It's for family and friends, and it says you can help, and it goes through lots of tips and things that people can do to support someone who's dying. And they also have a lot of information about grief for people who have lost someone to help get through the really nitty-gritty time.
So as you're saying, there is support out there, and there are amazing counsellors like yourself, mental health social workers, and there are people we can talk to. And, you know, lean on a friend. It's okay. I know as a woman who has a bit of a power control issue, it's okay to actually lean on a friend and family and cry and wail and let out that grief.
Trish, and to let someone take care of you.
Yes, big one, a very, very big one. Trish, thank you so much for coming into the studio tonight.
Thank you. Look, it's been really really good to be here. I just want to say one thing, and that is that sometimes people celebrate a life of someone on an anniversary. They can ask their friends or people who are close to that person to bring something that reminds them of that person and talk about it during the time that you meet. And that's a wonderful way to celebrate someone's life. And it's an ongoing thing. And I know with my mum, we catch up once a year. We don't talk all that much about her, but we have a photo there. And, you know, besides, you can't get a word in with mine and my brother's. He talks all the time, so...
Is he on Joy?
That's all we've got Trish on.
Yeah, it's her opportunity.
Thanks, Trish. You're listening to Hear Me Roar. Welcome back. That was a quick one.
I was expecting a little quick one.
It was a woo. Now, we're doing a bit of a follow-up. I just got to ruffle a bit of papers here. Sorry about that. Now, last week, do you remember what we spoke about?
No.
I'm going to put you on the spot. We did pets. Dr. Caroline Cook from the Lost Dogs Home. And I just wanted to share a quick story. A co-worker of mine today received her new baby puppy from a refuge home, a cute little cavalier spaniel called Harry. And it was lovely being there at that first moment where they met. So, yeah, if you're thinking about a puppy or a cat, check out the Lost Dogs Home. Coming up next week, we are talking polygamy. We're actually looking at the book called The Ethical Slut, and we're... Oops.
Did you write that?
I shouldn't have said that out.
No, you're allowed to. I think
can I say that word? I did it. It's
a couple of four-letter ones, but I think
it's in context.
Okay. It's just too late now, isn't it? I've just put myself off. We've also... I don't know whether you've noticed that there was an article, a couple looking for sperm. There's a lesbian couple.
Oh, I saw that in the paper, yeah. Big
yes.
article.
Yeah, it's a great article, and I've been speaking to the lovely ladies, and they're also coming on the show. We've also got a show coming up on Sporty Dykes, Equal Pay. We're doing a Positive Women Victoria coming in. Wire are doing a women's money show. We're also doing human trafficking, and I'm really interested in this, the trafficking of children and women for prostitution. So there's some really, really good stuff on Hear Me Roar coming up, so make sure you tune in. I also would like to do a bit of promo. We've got Caroline in the studio. She's been very quiet because we haven't let her have a mic. She's not allowed. One day we'll give her a mic. She's actually doing the Taste of Radio course. So if you're interested in doing the Taste of Radio course, check out the Joy website and follow that. And
it seems like everyone who's been through it enjoys it immensely. I've had a couple of sessions with people sitting in with me, and they're great, enthusiastic. Point out when I'm doing things wrong, you know. You love an apprentice,
good.
Don't you?
Do you ever do anything wrong?
No, I just have my own way sometimes of doing things.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody tonight. Thank you, Cheryl, for your first time on Hear Me Roar.
Thanks for having me. Nice and gentle, just the way I like it.
Oh, that was quite simple. That's excellent. Let me bring that ethical slut book out right now.
She'll be on next week.
There's no ethics.
She'll be Cheryl and her four partners next week.
I hope so. We need another mic. Thank you, Leanne. Lovely Leanne.
My pleasure, Sue and Cheryl and Trish. Thank you.
All right, well, we'll catch up with you all next week on Hear Me Roar. This is Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.